Hi, and welcome to another Cyber Podcast episode. I'm your host, Christoph Limpelaer, and in this episode, Jenny Codes talks to us about landing a job in IT and CyberSec straight out of university. Now, I'm very excited to have Jenny on the show because we met about a year ago, and back then she was interning and finishing up her degree. Then I watched her grow her social media presence significantly in a matter of months, and at the same time, going through a transition from internship to freelancing, contracting, and now landing a full-time software engineering role. And during the same period of time, I've had multiple cyber community members reaching out and asking for advice on how they could find a job after or even while in university and wrapping up their degrees. So I couldn't think of anyone better to speak to this subject than Jenny, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have her on the show. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, Jenny, and welcome.
Very much for having me.
So I'd like to start with a tweet that you posted earlier this month that said, and I quote, "I had no choice but to go to university. I was told that I could do whatever I wanted with my life after uni, but that having a bachelor's degree to fall back on would be invaluable. And I didn't understand then, but now I love my full-time job and I have money to spend on my hobbies." If you don't mind, what led you to tweet this?
So there are a lot of different opinions on parents' advice when it comes to turning 18. So a lot of people think it's better for parents to step back and let you choose what you want to do with your life. And some people do actually judge parents who did what my parents did and said, no, you need to go to uni. So I originally wanted to be a musician. I guess I am a musician. So I'm a trained singer and I play violin and guitar. But there isn't that much money in music, and all the gigs I was getting when I was 16, 17, 18 were all free gigs at the local pubs. And there isn't much money in it. So my mum said, if you go to uni, get a foundation, get a job, then you can spend your own money on your hobbies and then you can do gigs in the evening. She had a really good point. But part of me really did just want to go for it and become a musician. So that's what led me to write that. I guess in that moment, what I was thinking about doing was spending money on a ukulele. And that's what triggered it.
So at that point in time, when you were really wanting to become a musician, did you have any interest whatsoever in IT or InfoSec in general? Or did the process of looking for a degree lead you to want to try it and then realize that you really enjoyed that?
So it's kind of a process that happened over a couple of years. So pre-16, I wanted to go to university to study physics, and I wanted to work in research at a university in the future. But my mental health issues caused all my grades to plummet, and the only thing that I was still really good at was music. So it's the one thing that kept me going. It was my passion. And then we had someone come in from Swansea University, I think it was. So that's quite close to me. It's in Wales, in the United Kingdom, for those from the USA here, which I imagine is a lot of the people here. And he came in and he was in second year and he had gone to my school, and he explained that there are so many jobs in quarantine at that time. And I looked into it and I actually ended up applying for like lower level degrees. So full bachelor's at lower school, so not the red brick university, so I wouldn't get into them. And then also some HNDs and foundation degrees, because of my mental health, my grades wouldn't be good enough to go to the top end universities. And yeah, I guess from there I looked at them, and actually I was applying for a computer science course, and an advert came up on the side for an information security degree. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And so I applied half for computer science, half for information security on my UCAS forms. And it's quite a long story how I ended up where I did end up. But I ended up studying information security at a college linked to a university.
So every time I talk to someone who's based in the UK or who went to school in the UK, it really sounds like they have excellent information security programs or even IT in general programs out there, which I think can make such a drastic difference if you are interested in a field like that. And so kind of along the same lines of that, given the context that you're based in the UK and obviously education in the UK versus the USA has a slight different cost associated to it. But from your perspective, from what you went through, do you feel like university is a requirement for anybody interested in either IT or information security? Or is it more of a nice to have, but not necessarily a strict requirement?
It's nice to have, but it's not a strict requirement at all. In this field, it's all about your experience over your qualifications. The fact that I have a master's degree doesn't make me more senior than anyone in my job. And I love that about where I am. Sorry if you can hear dogs in the background. That's my next door neighbor's dogs. They have 7 little dogs outside. Could you hear a dog?
That's a lot of dogs.
Yeah, 7 Dachshunds.
I have 1 dog and that my hands are full, so I can't imagine having 7. But anyway.
Yeah. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done to make people in the hiring positions realize that you don't need a degree to do these jobs, because a lot of them still have it as a requirement. But we're going in the right direction for that. And it is possible to get a job in information security or in programming in the UK without a degree.
So I actually want to spend a good portion of the podcast episode extracting a little bit more of information out of that and getting your thoughts and actionable advice for the audience to be able to apply to kind of pull off what you've been able to pull off. But one thing before that, a slight little deviation is I remember, I think it was about 12 months ago when we initially met, you seemed very interested in freelancing instead of maybe having some kind of full-time salaried position somewhere. And I feel like that's kind of changed and morphed over time. So at one point in time, you were really into freelancing, and now you've come to value full-time employment more. So would you mind explaining a little bit more of that transition and what happened to make you look at it from a different perspective over the past 12 months?
So that's quite a simple answer. My great aunt, who was like a nan to me, died back in November 2020. And I was freelancing, and thankfully the company I was working with was very understanding. I ended up about a month behind schedule. But because I just started freelancing, I didn't have any extra funds behind me. And I still had my student overdraft, so like unused. So I ended up going into my student overdraft, which in the UK, they don't take that overdraft off you until a few years after uni. So it's still 0%, so I wasn't paying anything back off that money, but it's still debt I was getting into. And it just made it really difficult, and I realised that to run a proper freelancing business, I needed to have enough money behind me to manage myself if I was sick or if I needed time off, because I wouldn't be any good to anybody if I'm struggling in that way. So I in the UK, we've got, I don't know if you knew the differences between UK and US employment law, but we've got a lot of protections. So by being employed, it means that if I need any time off for bereavement or sick or anything, even maternity in the future, it's all covered through national insurance, which we pay. So it's one of the taxes that's taken off us. I don't know if it's the same in the US. But due to that, we've got a lot of protections when we're employed, which we don't have when we're self-employed. So I guess that's my answer to that.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm so sorry for your loss, Jenny, by the way. And when you compound all of those different things together with the fact that also you had COVID during that time period, which just jumbled things around, it made everything a little bit different. And then, like you said, you have different kinds of laws protecting or offering you different kinds of benefits, whether you're self-employed or whether you're in a full-time salaried position. I know from my perspective in the United States, getting any kind of healthcare coverage if you're not full-time employed is either insanely, insanely expensive or it's really crap coverage. And that's something I'm going through right now, right? And so I can definitely understand and relate with that. it is not a light or easy decision to make to go from full-time employment to freelancing instead. There are so many different factors that you have to keep in mind. And so I can totally understand and relate and see where you're coming from with that. But on that note, would you say that kind of starting from more of the freelancing side helped you then move on and land a full-time position? Or do you think you could have just as easily transitioned from uni to a full-time job without necessarily having the freelancing step in between? Like, did that help in any way or not really?
Helped me in terms of time management and actually managing myself and not needing a manager. So I think it did really help my skill set that I could put on my CV. However, I did work for 2 years in the industry after my first degree before my master's. So I did have some experience behind me. And my internship that I had during my master's degree was actually supposed to turn into a full-time job, but it didn't because of COVID. There were cuts in the company, and the interns were the first people to be cut, sadly. So yes, I would say not so much for me, because I wasn't freelancing for that long. So I can't compare it too much, but I think that if you are freelancing before you land a job, it does do a lot for you, because you've got testimonials, or you should get testimonials from clients that are happy. And you'll have a lot of experience working with clients, and a lot of companies you might apply for, they might be agencies that work with clients, and you already know how to interact and how to manage a relationship with a client, and that really helps.
And those are skills that you often don't build while you're in school. That's something that you get as you get your first position, or as you freelance, or as you intern, and you start to build some of those skills that you can't really build otherwise. So I could see that making a tremendous difference, actually. And if we take a step back for a minute, Jenny, and think through an ideal world scenario where somebody signs up for, let's say, a cybersecurity major program in the US or UK or wherever else, and they go through the 4 years to get their degree, and they finally get that degree, they had good jobs, they had a good time in school, they learned a few things, and now they're trying to enter the field, the professional field. What I've been hearing from some cyber community members is that they can't seem to find an opportunity no matter what they seem to do. So again, they may have a pretty solid resume in terms of they have a great degree, maybe they have a few projects they can show off on there, but they still can't get their foot in the door. They still can't get past, or even an interview, or if they do get an interview, they can't get past that first or second interview stage. They can't seem to land that job. But you've had multiple opportunities, both on the freelancing side, as a contractor, and now as a full-time software engineer. How did you do it? What's your secret, I guess, is the one way of asking that question.
So I actually really struggled when I got my first degree. I've recently been diagnosed with dyslexia at 24, but I didn't know I was until then. So I went through my whole bachelor's degree and trying to get my first graduate job without knowing I was dyslexic. So that made psychometric tests almost impossible for me to pass. So, and there were multiple large companies I wanted to work for that I applied for, but I couldn't get past that first barrier with the psychometric test. So I think an issue with that is that, yes, if I had my dyslexia diagnosis, I could have bypassed that due to the Equality Act in the UK. They wouldn't have been able to test me. They would have had to have a face-to-face interview on me, because they wouldn't have been able to judge me just on the outcome of that test due to the fact that I have a disability. But that's not the case. I don't think that psychometric tests should be used in that way anyway. So I did actually really struggle to find my first one. And I'd say this is where LinkedIn comes in. So I wouldn't have had my foot in the door without LinkedIn. So I'd reached out to people during my dissertation for my bachelor's degree. And one of the people I reached out to, who answered some questions for research, actually turned around and offered me a job. So it was at quite a small company. They were less than 10 employees. And I'd only done a small amount of coding, but it was a lower paid job, which meant that I was a technician, so I'd be learning on the job, and I was editing code on a Ruby on Rails application. So I went in through a lower paid technician role, which then allowed me to move to another job later on. So it's all about finding that foot in the door that might not be exactly what you want. I did really enjoy my time in that job. That job actually made me realize that I wanted to be a programmer rather than working in cyber compliance. So I'm really glad I had it.
So walk us through that, if you don't mind, a little bit more detail of when you say you reached out to people on LinkedIn, how did that work? Did you go to LinkedIn and then go in the search bar and search for people in certain positions? Did you look at some of your mutual contacts and then just start randomly or cold emailing or cold contacting some of those contacts? How did you get started with that?
I did my undergraduate dissertation on the security of SCADA systems, but the human side of it. So how putting policies in place could reduce the risk of attacks on national grids, like national energy grids, for example. It having policies in place could mitigate those risks. So what I did was I looked for people in jobs who worked directly with SCADA systems, such as people from the national grid, people who had SCADA in their title, people who were directors of security anywhere. And I wrote them a polite, this is before in-mails came in, I think you could just message each other back then. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a polite message explaining that I'm doing my dissertation for my information security degree, and I was wondering if they'd answer some questions to help with my research. And I actually had quite a lot of people reply back and help me with it. And as it happens, one of the people thought it was really showed what type of personality I had to reach out like that and to find the right kind of people. And that's why I was hired.
So if you're hearing this and you think, well, now they have in mail and you can't really just do that anymore, don't fully discredit this, just because I think a lot of times we take for granted the I forget what they call it, but that law of connections, right, where you're connected to pretty much everyone in the world by a degree of six separations or whatever it's called. And so the reason I bring that up is because you may have someone who is connected with someone that you're trying to reach, even if you're not personally connected with them. You could always try to send them a connection request, but maybe a better approach is asking that person that you know who is connected with them to send a connection email or a connection message through LinkedIn and tell them, here's why I'm trying to reach that person. And as long as it's not a salesy request, which it wouldn't be in your case, why would they say no to that? So you can always say, hey, here's a quick little message that highlights what I'm trying to do, why I'm trying to reach them. Could you please put me in contact with them? And I've rarely had people say no to that, as long as it's a legitimate request. So that could be a pretty solid approach. I'm trying to think what else you could do. But always look at some of those mutual contacts. And especially if it's someone that I'm connected with, I'd be more than happy to help if it's for something like a school project or being able to reach them in that regard. So that's a really good tip. Use LinkedIn, use your contacts. One other thing that, you know, I mentioned that you grew your social media presence significantly. Would you say that that's had a pretty major impact in terms of you getting opportunities, like reaching out to your network and saying, hey, I'd like to get a job, or I'd like to do this or that, and then having people come in and say, well, here, I can connect you to this person. Has that helped in any way?
Well, back in September, when I first got made redundant from the internship I had, I was looking to go into work before I decided to freelance. And I did post on Twitter asking for help finding someone. Funny thing is, as I was put in touch with the one person who actually ended up finding me a job, I actually rejected the job. The one person who ended up finding me a job was actually based in Cardiff, where I lived, and found me a Cardiff-based job. It was at a very large company, and all my IP, all my personal projects would become their IP, because that's how a lot of contracts work. So I wasn't willing to sign a contract that required that, so that's why I turned down that job. But it did help in that case, but I don't think you need a large platform to do that, because you if someone's looking for a job on Twitter and they ask people to retweet to try and help them, you could have 200 followers and you'll still get a massive outreach for that, because as soon as someone with more followers sees it and retweets it, it's out there. So I wouldn't say having a big follower account on Twitter or anything helps very much. It's quality over quantity, definitely.
I'm really glad you mentioned that. And I think a common theme that I'm hearing here is tapping into the community and reaching out and saying, look, I need help, whether it's for my project, whether it's to find a job. Just can anybody help me retweet this? Can you help me find or make me a connection with somebody already in the industry? So it sounds like that's a common theme there. Is there anything else you can think of? For example, is there anything or any tips that you have for sprucing up a resume, or did you not even really have to mess with your resume a whole lot because you were able to find that position just by reaching out to them directly?
So I've always been very proud. I'm going to call it a CV because that's what we call it in the UK. I've always been quite proud of my CV. So I remember I was probably 14 when we had the lesson in school where we all made our little CV. It didn't have anything on it back then, but you had to learn how to properly list your skills in a way that would make them marketable. And I've actually updated my CV every 6 months since then, slowly adding things in. So it's probably still a version of, like, not the same Word document, but all the stuff has moved across. It's probably still bits on my CV now that were on there 10 years ago. What I would say with CVs is you don't have to keep it to one page. You really don't. Two pages is fine. I wouldn't go over two. Put a projects page on it. So if you can fit all your, like, your skills and your education on, oh, and jobs, obviously, on one side of A4, have a whole side of A4 for projects and list them. These don't even have to be finished projects, because it doesn't matter that they're finished. It just matters that you came up with these ideas and that you're passionate about them and you've been working on them bit by bit. So these could be anything from a project you've had. I'm trying to think of a cyber project you could have. I remember loads that people in uni used to do. But, it could be a coding project, or it could be a script you're really proud of, something like that.
Yeah, anything to show off what you've worked on, absolutely. I think that's a really great idea. And actually, let's do this. Let's set an action item for anybody who's listening right now who's planning on trying to get a job in, let's say, the next 12 to 18 months. If you're in that position, regardless of whether you're currently going through university or getting a degree or looking to transition roles, let's make an action item that you'll reach out to a set number of people. And I don't know if you can say, I'll reach out to 10 people or 15 people or 20 people, but try to think of a reasonable number of people who are related to the industry that you're interested in, or a position that you're interested in. Maybe they're a hiring manager for a SOC analyst position and that's what you want to do. Reach out to them. Try to think through a way of reaching out, not just saying, hey, please help me, but maybe saying something like, hey, I'm working on this project. Would you mind if I pick your brain on how to solve for X, right? I'm stuck at this point. Do you have any feedback on how I could improve this? I'm currently a student in school. I'd love to get your feedback. Or can I just, buy you a coffee for 15 minutes of your time? And most of the time they'll say, don't even buy me the coffee. I'll just give you 15 minutes of my time, right? And but so that I can pick your brain on how I can bolster my resume. And I think more often than not, you'll be surprised at how many people say yes to that and how many people are willing to help. So jot that down as an action item. If you want me to hold you accountable to that, I'd be more than happy to do that. Jenny, as we move towards the last section of this podcast episode, I like to do what's called a quick fire round, which is just really quick and short questions and answers. And so the first one that I'm going to ask you is, what are you working on now? And what are some of your personal goals?
Can it be anything I'm working on now?
Yeah, anything that you're interested in or passionate about right now.
So I'm currently trying to get a blog engine working. So it would be it's a headless CMS. But I want it to work for all of the blogs that I have, and I want to move all my WordPress blogs over to it. So eventually it'll be a headless CMS with loads of Vue.js front ends, and there'll also be an API to move everything across from WordPress. So that's my main project at the moment. What was the other question?
No, that was it. I was going to say, I may have to pick your brain on that and see how you end up doing it, because that sounds like something I could benefit from doing myself. So I'll definitely be following that project. Second question, what's one thing that you're most excited about doing again now that restrictions, specifically from COVID, are being lifted worldwide?
Going to Comic-Con.
Have you been able to go recently, or are you looking forward to that?
So I'm looking forward to it. And even though they're running again, I'm not going to go until levels are down.
Uh-huh.
COVID levels are quite high where I am right now, even though we're not in lockdown, because I think there's going to be some issues with the general public if we go into lockdown again, even though I think we need to.
Yeah, that's I really am crossing my fingers and looking at the charts every day and hoping it just goes back down. Please, please, please. We cannot go back in lockdown. Anyway, moving on. What's one thing that you would change about the cybersecurity industry if you could snap your fingers and wake up tomorrow and see that it happened?
So many options. You wouldn't need a degree to get any job.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good one. Perfect. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. If people want to follow up, how can they connect and reach out to you?
Can we like tag each other on here in the cyber?
Yeah, you can. So if you're on the cyber Discord, you can do @JennyCodes, and because she's in the cyber Discord, that'll send her a push notification. So that's definitely one way. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't have my DMs open on Twitter for historical reasons, mainly because I just get loads of hives and pictures that I don't want. But yeah, you can at me on here, and I'll be happy to talk to anyone on the public forum.
And then on Twitter, of course, you are @JennyCodes as well, right?
Yes.
Perfect. So if anybody wants to follow her, definitely recommend following on @JennyCodes on Twitter. And then, of course, on Cyber Discord, as mentioned. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode. And please do give her a big thank you, whether on the Discord or Twitter, for her time and for sharing with us what she's been able to do and learn over the past year or so. Now, immediately after this episode ends, members of Cyber's Discord community will actually be able to ask Jenny any question that they'd like directly. So if you'd like to have that kind of access to our future guests for live questions, you can join by going to cyber.com/Discord, and we'll keep you posted on when our next episode will be. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.